Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solaria Report. We have a special treat today. You all know how much I appreciate how much good information can be gleaned from movies. Hollywood tells us all. And today we have a real, a person who's really extremely knowledgeable about that topic, Jay Dyer, who is the proprietor and founder of Jay's Analysis. Wonderful website I recommend to you on the internet. Jay's going to tell us about it more as we talk. I first met Jay when he made a presentation at the Secret Space Program Conference last year in Bastrop, Texas, and he wove a fabulous presentation on how different symbolism, different parts of different movies explained what was going on in this world. And I said, now, there's a guy who's mastered the movies and the symbolism of what they can teach us. So I immediately asked him, Jay, would you come do the Solaria Report? And he's got a wonderful show, and I've been on his show. So now he's joining me on my show. So, Jay, welcome to the Solaria Report.
Well, thank you, Ms. Fitz. It's a pleasure to be here. We had a lot of fun in Texas. I learned a lot from you and the other speakers. And I think we had a good interview a few months ago on my show, and so it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and so the other thing I have to say is you had the good sense to get out of L.A. and move to Tennessee.
Well, that's funny. I've never lived in L.A. I lived in San Diego for about 6
years.
Oh,
okay. Well, when you live in Tennessee, you think of L.A. and San Diego as basically one metropolis.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, we can say that I lived in L.A. and that I was really hip and famous and popular and that I needed to get away from it all and come to Tennessee.
Okay, well, let's just dive in. What we're focused on today is what the movies teach us about mind control. And often at the Solaria Report, I get questions about what is mind control, how does it work? And partly because I feel it's so important, if you're going to understand how geopolitics or the economy work, you need to understand mind control as a technique. Whether it's, mind control of the general population, sort of big mind control or little of individuals. And it really is all in the movie. So I appreciate your joining me to talk about it. So why don't we just start off with, because mind control is a big topic. So what do we mean by mind control?
Well, as you said, it could apply to many things. But specifically, we know that there are programs that have been developed by entities such as the Tavistock Institute out of England, as well as the programs by the CIA, oftentimes referred to under the moniker of MKUltra, but this was actually dozens of sub-projects that spanned a few decades, beginning in the 40s with the military experimenting with truth drugs and, what drugs could be used to extract information out of captured POWs or to create, as you said, some sort of agent or assassin. What types of techniques might be used to basically program. And so the doctors involved in this were pretty infamous, I guess we could say now, characters like Jose Delgado or Dr. Cameron. And you can actually find their books. They've written books that discuss these subjects openly. Dr. Jolyon West. And what their books talk about is different techniques and patterns and successes that they had in getting human beings to do what they want.
Right.
So from these projects, what sprung from this was MKUltra was ultimately investigated by the Senate, and it was eventually shut down, supposedly in the 70s, and this led to it basically being renamed MK Search and was moved to Fort Detrick, so it was put under the umbrella of biological warfare. Which kind of makes sense because it uses chemical agents, of course, at least in these early on programs, where they were discovering the possibilities of what could be done with LSD. And so I don't know how familiar your audience might be with Tim Leary, but Timothy Leary was part of this overarching project. He was working with a lot of these doctors and psychiatrists. And that's what's funny is that most people think of this kind of thing being maybe a military project, and that might have been what it was at its inception. But over time, it really fell into the hands of the doctors and psychiatric institutions and the university system, which is where a lot of this research was done, such as Mount Royal in Canada, where Dr. Ewan Cameron was, where he was experimenting with electroshock, as well as LSD, or Stanford Research Institute, where they were experimenting with all kinds of things, including what you might have seen in the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats. Now, I know that's not a top movie that's on our list of topics today, but that is a film that's dealing with something tangentially related to the topic of mind control and MKUltra. So that's the establishment's origin of this stuff. And then what we have in film is kind of a lot of references, hints, and then explicit storylines that deal with this, you know, going all the way back to John Frankenheimer's film, The Manchurian Candidate, a film that we're going to talk about, something like Gaslight. So, you know, there's just countless, I've collected together a list of probably about 40, somewhere between upper 30 and 40. Yeah, that explicitly deal with this theme, and it's really popular now, you know, in the kind of big blockbusters that come out, like these Marvel Avengers type movies. You know, they're always using this theme of mind control and programming and so forth. But to conclude my response to your question, I would say that in the broad sense, really what mind control is advertising and mass marketing and Hollywood pop culture. So it can simultaneously reveal things as it's also using those techniques. And I'm not saying by that all advertising marketing is evil or bad. I'm just saying that it's the same principles and techniques are going to be used for good or for evil by, you know, persons who might be schooled in these techniques. And so, for example, the early days of the CIA, a lot of the people who went from the OSS or the CIA, or who went to it, they came from the world of advertising.
Right.
So anyway, right, that's my rough response there.
One of the things I wanted to mention before, we're not going to discuss it today, is that one of my favorite books on mind control is written by the author of the best-selling book, Encyclopedia of Country Living, Carla Emery. And believe it or not, she wrote a book called Secret Don't Tell that takes the history of mind control back into the medieval ages. And it's really the history of criminal hypnosis and, you know, creating mind control agents. And then there are other people who take it back to the Crusades, coming back from into Europe from the Middle East, where they ran into the assassins, you know, the original assassins, and the use of mind control to create the perfect assassin. But so there's a long history here, but there's no doubt that the last, you know, since World War II, we've seen an explosion of investment in mind control. And as that investment has, you know, increased, we see Hollywood telling us more and more. So I would say historically, we're in a very intense mind-controlled period.
Yes.
That's what it looks like to me. Okay, so you chose, or we both chose, I chose some, but you chose some very unusual movies. And we have 12 movies to run through. And after I went through them again yesterday in detail, and I realized, boy, they really do show a lot of the different techniques. So we've chosen 12, and I'm going to ask you to just walk us through them, and you pick the order. It's pretty juicy, so let's dive in.
All right. Well, I didn't really put much thought into the order of these films, so don't worry. This isn't a film sequence that's going to put you into any kind of mind control trance. So I just kind of randomly listed them. So, but. Well, so the first one that I thought stood out because I'm presently writing my book, and I just finished the chapter on this film. It's Stanley Kubrick's 1980 film, The Shining. This is, you know, generally listed as one of the top horror films of all time.
Uh-huh.
And what's interesting about this is it's adapted from the Stephen King story and changed a bit by Kubrick. And what we see here is the story of Jack Torrance, played by Jack Nicholson, who a guy who wants to be great. He wants to be amongst the upper crust, the elite, and he thinks that his family is something that is a hindrance to this. And so he, you know, consistently through the film will make these derogatory statements about how his family's keeping him back, and he, you know, he wants to be amongst this upper crust, who are the jet set and the elite that once inhabited this Overlook Hotel, which was a location where they would have dalliances and orgies and parties. So it's no longer a location for that kind of activity by the time of the story in the film, but Jack starts to experience spectral phenomena and what I argue is a kind of gradual demonic possession. And so these spirits are whispering to him, you know, what he needs to do. And we also tragically learn that he has abused his son, Danny. And Danny has actually developed the phenomena, which, you know, usually happens in the cases of a traumatic mind control that relates in severe trauma, a split in his personality. And so Danny has an alternate person who kind of protects him named Tony. And whenever Tony comes to the surface, he speaks in a different voice. But there's also a kind of spiritual element here. So a lot of times when you're watching this film, you're thinking right away that, well, Tony may be a demon or something. But in actual fact, it's Tony who kind of helps Danny throughout the film to cope with the trauma of his father. And we also learn that Jack isn't just abusing him. He also seems to have sexual deviancy and have possibly sexually abused Danny as well. And so we see this maze that is, I think, a representation of the world that Danny and his wife Wendy, or his mom Wendy, are lost in. They're lost in the sick maze of Jack, right? And I'm sure everybody remembers that famous scene at the end, you know, where he's chasing Danny through the maze, but. The point being is that you consistently see mirror imagery. You consistently see things written in reverse, rad rom, right? And these are all phenomena that, you know, we can find associated with things that relate to mind control. So I picked this one as one of the top ones just because it includes, you know, trauma, abuse, pedophilia, I think, which is hinted at, as well as the spiritual element that Jack thinks that he's going to enter into greatness and you know, dance amongst the elite if he's willing to commit, you know, blood sacrifice by killing his family.
This is something Kubrick looks at in more than a couple films.
Right.
But Franklin Sanders has an expression. He says, he'll say about somebody who hungers to work their way up the, you know, the social prestige ladder, they pine for the treats of the tapeworm. The tapeworm being the hierarchy and the, you know, Mr. Global system. And The Shining is good. It shows how somebody sells out that which is real for something that is unreal.
Yeah, and I got a chance to work on my Jack Nicholson impersonation while
I was there. Oh, perfect.
So, do you want to hear a little?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you're going to do a scene from The Shining?
Well, there's just this one phrase that always sticks in my head. It's when he's being interviewed. He says, my wife Wendy's a confirmed horror film fanatic. I'm sure she's going to love it.
Nicholson is so unbelievable. Yeah, Kubrick... Boy, Kubrick, I'm a great fan of Kubrick, but his last one, Eyes Wide Shut, You know, he died, I think, right after he finished editing it. I forget which, but you
Right,
almost
that's
feel
the
like
story,
he
yeah.
went too far in that one. Okay, so what's your next one?
Well, let's see, we've got next on the list is AI. And AI is interesting because Kubrick was involved in this film. This is actually a script that he was going to turn into a movie. Never came about, so Spielberg picked up the torch on this one and also altered the ending of Kubrick's version. So what we have here is a representation both of artificial intelligence and the possibilities as to where that might lead in the future, including the idea of childless families adopting or buying, I guess, a kind of Pinocchio boy, right, to be their substitute son. And there's a lot of references to mythology or and to fairy tales, Pinocchio, Cinderella, and so forth. And so we have that David is the AI here, and what Spielberg wants us to do is to feel sorry for the AI, basically. It's you'll notice this trend in a lot of films that deal with artificial intelligence is that we need to begin to consider the possibility that in the future they will have rights. And so I've dealt with this in a lot of articles at my site, and I think that this is a preparation and basically what I call predictive programming. This is prepping us for the acceptance of artificial intelligence in every aspect of our life. And so we'll get to the more of that, I'm sure, later. But what I called it was a transhumanist fairy tale
Right.
because it's all about David essentially becoming alive, becoming real. And what's curious is that through all the biblical imagery that's kind of used and twisted, there's a lot of Cain and Abel type symbolism that's used with his human so-called brother, who's crippled. And we find that David is better at everything that that his brother can do. His brother is also kind of a butthead. He's a really annoying guy. You can't stand the guy, but you really, really like David. And I think this is all on purpose. And so there's a really weird scene where Monica is going to activate David's emotional side. That's his mother, of course. And what she does is that she recites these trigger words that activate him. And I always found that curious because I think in a lot of these films, what you're going to see is that they have not just a deeper mythological significance or symbolic significance, but they also kind of refer to how things operate with people who are under mind control.
Right.
And there are, trigger words and so forth. And so David kind of represents a child, dealing with this kind of abuse and mind control, just like Danny in The Shining. So even though this is a an AI character, right? I think there's also a deeper reference to the possibilities of what goes on in mind control. And so the film tries to excite our emotions to feel sorry for David, and the Spielberg pictures the AI like Jews being taken to Nazi concentration camps.
Right.
That's explicit, whether they're being taken off, and there's references to the Holocaust that the robots make. And so there's also hints at Dante's Inferno. They go to the flesh fair where the robots are being ripped apart in a kind of a Christ-like scene where they're, strapped with arms spread in a kind of cruciform pose. And really, I think that the message is that, like 2001, it's really going to be AI that's going to take us into the future, or humans are going to die and the AI will live on. That seems to be the message of AI, because the end of the film, of course, the robots have advanced and appear to look kind of like aliens, but they're actually just advanced AI, and they don't remember or know about their creators, so they're kind of doing some excavation in archaeology, trying to figure out about their human creators, and they find David, and so David basically achieves eternal life or immortality as a kind of new Adam. He's
Right.
a new kind of Christ figure.
Right. It's amazing how many of these movies explore the engineering both of humans or robots who take on human characteristics with AI. It comes up again and again. Yeah.
And I do see that as a kind of preparatory programming.
Well, someone from Tennessee sent me for Christmas they sent me a box of chocolate pecans and then a video on transhumanism. And I wrote him a note back and I said, "Thanks for making me fat and depressed at Christmas." It's one of the most depressing documentaries I ever watched. Okay, on to the next.
Let's see. So I listed next Blade Runner. And Blade Runner is, of course, the Philip K. Dick story. Do androids dream of electronic sheep, I think? I'm trying to think off the top of my head here. Anyway, but so Blade Runner deals with a lot of the same topics that we've seen so far. And this was made, put into film format in 82 by Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
And we see the 2020 landscape of Los Angeles, which is interesting because it's a huge hellhole. And it's a sort of corporately controlled, multicultural cesspit, ruled over by this giant uncapped pyramid where the corporate elite sort of sit above everyone. And the way that this corporation has risen to power is that they have created synthetic humans. And not just synthetic humans, they actually have a whole industry where they've gotten so good with their mimesis, or creating copies or mimics, that you can't tell one apart from another. A real human, from a what they call a replicant, right, an AI. And so the only way to do this is to read the very small microscopic serial numbers that are listed on replicants. And so Harrison Ford, of course, plays the character Deckard, who's a cop who's very good at hunting down replicants. And we discover that Rutger Hauer's character named Roy Batty is this replicant who's kind of gone rogue. And they're wanting to break free from their termination programming, right? So they have a programming that they're very good at being assassins, they're very good at killing, but they have a kind of expiration date. And so Roy Batty decides he wants to be free from this and continue living, so to speak. So him and his cadre, we learn that they're on a killing spree, and Roy Batty wants to get back to his creator and find out how to end this termination programming. Now, this is curious because this sounds a lot like the kind of stories that we hear and read about with programmed assassins. They have sometimes this suicide programming where they are to some degree told, or it's instilled within them, that if something happens, if they're caught, whatever, to go ahead and kill themselves. And we do read about that kind of thing in, projects such as Bluebird, Artichoke, and Kilter, and so forth. At least it's at least hinted at there, especially with the kind of work that you and Cameron was doing. And so we also have that AI theme. So isn't it curious that what we continue to see is mind control and the AI theme being paired together, all the way back into the 70s and 80s. And so, there's a lot that you could say about Blade Runner just because it's so filled with, nanotech comes up in Blade Runner. This is back in, how in the world did Philip K. Dick and, I guess Ridley Scott, they must have had some inside knowledge, they're talking about nanotech back then. So,
well, I'm trying to remember, is Rick the cop who goes after the replicants, is it finally come out in the end that he is a replicant?
Yes, that is the big reveal, is that
so, Deckard, right, so he's mind-controlled into thinking he's a human.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, and the way he discovers this, of course, is that he has the same dream sequences that the replicants have. And so what that eventually tells him is that that even his dreams that he thinks are his are actually programmed. And we see that a lot of the replicants have been given false memories. They've been implanted with memories from another source, that being their creators, which makes them think that they're, you know, they're real. They had memories of their childhood and growing up on, you know, by the beach and playing on riding a bike and so forth. And it's interesting too, I mentioned in my piece DARPA, and DARPA has the ability to, at least so they claim, to implant false memories. There have been mainstream even articles that DARPA talks about this. So again, once we see AI and we see mind control paired up once again.
Well, it's interesting. The two techniques that you see in this whole series of movies is one, implanting false memories, and then also wiping memories. So in some cases, you're trying to wipe people's real memories. In other cases, you're trying to implant false memories. And it's almost, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I was interested in how many movies you chose that used artificial intelligence, but you're watching, it's almost like you're watching a huge prototype through the centuries of asking, can I turn a human being into a machine, and can I turn a machine into a human being? Right.
That is the key. You nailed it right there.
Right, right. And, you know, it's funny, we're not going to talk about Bill Gibson and any of his, you know, Neuromancer or any of his work, but, you know, can I send the human consciousness in to travel around in the machine? And there's one you chose where, in fact, that comes up. But, you know, that ultimately, you know, all the techniques that they use to try and turn a human being into machine, as you said, you're watching them use those techniques to manipulate the robots.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was Blade Runner. And it's funny, Blade Runner is Ridley Scott. And Ridley Scott and Tony Scott are two of my favorite directors of all time. Tony did Enemy of the State, which you know is one of my favorites. And finally, one day, a friend of mine called me and said, you know, I just had lunch with Tony Scott, and he said to say thank you for promoting Enemy of the State as much as you do.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, because I think, I mean, it's
like
they're just amazing. They're amazing.
I like Tony Scott's films, too.
Yeah. Okay, so what's next?
Let's see. We have Bourne Trilogy listed next. I've read some Robert Ludlum, but it's been a long time, and I did go back and watch some of these, but I didn't get to the entire Bourne Trilogy. But I remember it pretty good, and, you know, it's pretty on the surface as to, you know, what's going on here. You know, we learn that Jason Bourne, played by Matt Damon, is, of course, a programmed assassin. And so he's had these instances of kind of blacking out, dissociating that we've seen early on in the films, I think in part one. And he doesn't know, he's floating around the Mediterranean Sea. He doesn't know he got shot, where, you know, why is he there? And he has amnesia. Like, he doesn't remember, you know, what, who he is and what's going on. And so he discovers, of course, that he's, you know, he's quite proficient at killing people. So to make a long story short, he's involved in these different operations, Operation Treadstone and so forth. And throughout the trilogy, what we learn is that he was, in fact, put into the MKUltra program. And he was a programmed assassin. And this, of course, led to him kind of having a break eventually. And he went nuts, so to speak. But he went nuts fighting the establishment who programmed him, right, who basically wronged him. So, you know, there's a lot of Cold War type stuff that ties into that, which is always in Robert Ludlum's stories. But I think that, you know, Ludlum is definitely basing what he must have had some inside, you know, sources and knowledge of this stuff. I don't recall his background off the top of my head, but he probably has been military service or something. But yeah, so we have here one of the things that is not mentioned in the original trilogy that I thought was curious, that came up in part four, which I did write an analysis of, is the Bourne Legacy, which has Jeremy Renner taking kind of the place of the Matt Damon character, but the character named Aaron Cross. And there we have this pharmaceutical company that steps into the picture. And here we have this direct tie-in to how MKUltra really came about with LSD.
Right.
And the pharmaceutical company has developed a nanotech pill that he has to take if he wants to live. So this ties into the Super Soldier program, and the Super Soldier program is a development out of MKUltra, the idea of biologically enhancing humans through whatever means, be it chemical, android, cyborg, so forth. All of these come out of MKUltra because of the fact that Jose Delgado and Dr. Ewan Cameron were involved in implanting electrodes into human brains and so forth, and firing different, you know, switches and seeing what would happen.
Right.
And the, as I mentioned as well on different interviews, what's called the Schwitzgebel machine, and this was the prison tracking device that was developed in the 1970s to monitor a person's heart rate and send it back, and their location, send it back to the guard tower, so that you didn't have to constantly, you know, stare at the prisoners all day. You could just kind of let them wear this anklet. Now, isn't that sound like the iWatch?
Right.
That's exactly what the iWatch does. It monitors your heart rate, your location, and pretty much everything about you.
Right.
Anyway, that's a different topic. But it, what we see is that with Bourne Legacy in particular is that Big Pharma and transhumanism, i.e. super soldiers, biological enhancement, genetic modification, are all related to MKUltra.
So one of my, this is out of the blue, but one of my theories is ISIS or super soldiers.
Well, they're certainly aided by a superpower.
Well, but if you look at the what pictures we have, not to say that they're reliable, but they tend to be taller. And, of course, they're covered, so you can't see what color their skin is. But I suspect, you know, you've got a whole pile of super soldiers in there, you know, plus mercenaries. Anyway, and that's why I think, not for today, but exploring what the movies tell us about super soldiers is always very interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah. The Bourne trilogy, of course, has gone on and on and on. But I think probably the greatest mind control thing about the Bourne trilogy is they always leave you with the fantasy that somebody who knows the internal tricks of, you know, how the intelligence agencies operate can live free and under, you know, under the radar of the intelligence agencies. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the ultimate mind control, is to imply that the, you know, the network is still loose enough that you can go under the radar. I didn't know if you know this, but they're coming out with a new one with Matt Damon back again. It's called Jason Bourne. It's coming out in July. Or that is scheduled for July this year, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's next?
Well, let's see. I think next I chose Kingsman. And this was curious because it dealt with the British side of all this. And I did a lot of research in my graduate period on British intelligence. So I found this one to be really interesting in terms of what it revealed. It revealed quite a bit. It's set in the context of kind of a satirical, comic booky, you know, jokey fashion. It nevertheless revealed quite a bit of truth, particularly with regard to depopulation and eugenics. And so that's something that we don't generally see in mind control films. You know, it's usually focused on the story of somebody like Jason Bourne, but here we have an overarching, almost, I call it almost the ultimate conspiracy film, because we see that this nefarious character played by Samuel L. Jackson is going to use electromagnetic technology through the cell phones, through a back door, to basically drive everybody crazy and create pandemonium and chaos. And then the elites will, of course, kind of secret themselves away to a breakaway civilization while everybody else goes to heck. And there you have it. And I think that's the real plan. I mean, we can find actual documents from people like Michael Aquino, where he talks about the use of psyops. And he's, of course, the head of the Temple of Set, which is a satanic organization. And he's a colonel in the military, and he deals with psyops. And he wrote a famous piece called From Psyop to Mind War, The Psychology of Victory. And it discusses extensively the use of electromagnetic technology for mind control. Zbigniew Brzezinski, the famous long-time bureaucrat person who's been there forever, wrote in his book back in between two ages, back in 1972 or three, of that very thing of using electromagnetic wave technology to influence masses of people. So I thought that this was curious. It was all revealed in The Kingsman, this kind of jokey film.
Well, I think The Kingsman is a very important film. Now, I have to tell you, as a movie, I think it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. But in terms of outing the technology, to me, it's a must watch. You have to, and I'm always telling people, please do not watch this with your children. This is so violent, and
Yeah,
the
right.
violence is so completely over the top. There's one scene where the person who controls the technology is Richmond Valentine, played by Samuel Jackson, does an absolutely fabulous acting job. But so Richmond gives away free SIM cards. He's fielded global satellites. You know, space is important, and he's got this machine where he can send out the tones through a SIM card. And to prototype it, just to run a test, he runs a test on a Southern Pentecostal church, 200, devout
Exactly.
Christians giving praise in the middle of a Sunday service, and then they jump up and start killing each other. And 200 Christians, devout Christians, kill each other on a Sunday in church, as a result of only some of them having the Richmond Valentine SIM cards.
Exactly.
So complete and perfect mass mind control. You don't have to do anything. It's not expensive. It's highly economic, and you can get, phenomenal results is the implication. Now, here's let me tell you an interesting statistic. I wrote a commentary 2 weeks ago called The Kingsman Campaign. I called up sort of 20 of the people I most confer with, trust, whose advice I get, people like Joseph Farrell, many people you know. And I said, okay, what percentage of the support for the leading candidates in the Republican and Democratic primaries comes from Richmond Valentine's machine? Okay, so let me ask you, what percentage of their support comes from mind control technology, whether it's advertising, whether it's entrainment, subliminal programming, whether it's, Richmond Valentine. So how much of their current support comes from mind control?
I would say the vast amount, especially when we look at
So
what we're.
all 20 people, the average was 75 to 80%.
Yeah.
They said the vast majority of the support for those two candidates is coming from mind control technology. Then I asked them the question, okay, how many people, what percentage understand that? And they said, 1% or less.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
Right. And that's an enormous divergence. And what I'm wondering now, believe it or not, The Kingsman, the last time I checked, was number six or number seven most popular movie on Netflix. And they're coming out with a sequel. So something's resonating.
Well, I see it as revelation of method, and they like to reveal what they're doing and what they're going to do as a conditioning program. And so, I couldn't think of a better example than this film. And I think it's important to mention too, given what we both talked about at the conference, space program conference, is that this is going to start talking about Skynet. And
Right.
Skynet, start us talking about it, because Skynet's going to come out in the rest of our thought, the rest of these movies pretty clearly in
Right.
some form or fashion. And that's because all of these things are related. It's important to see that it's not this program over here, that program over there. It's an entire full spectrum dominance plan that's interested, I believe, in doing what I call a synthetic overlay over all of reality. And so everything is going to be encompassed, I think, in this kind of Pentagon military industrial complex global Skynet grid, right, where
Right.
everything can be tracked and traced under the Internet of Things. You'll have the smart cities, and that's going to come up in the next film that we talk about, Minority Report, where you have the IBM CEO saying all of this openly in a lecture.
Right. Right. Skynet is coming up in more and more movies. It's yeah. Okay, so pick your next.
Right, so next is Minority Report, and this, like Blade Runner, is a Philip K. Dick story, and the Minority Report is what was made into a film by Spielberg back in 2002, right after 9/11, interestingly, because we know that 9/11 would be the justification for the massive ramping up of the surveillance state. So you had all this technology that had been developed by DARPA, the Pentagon, and so forth, under the auspices of the Cold War and the Star Wars Defense Initiative. And so 9/11 kind of was the coming out party and the justification for why all of this NSA backdoor, all this stuff, you know, had to be implemented. And this includes Skynet. This includes satellite tracking. Well, it had to be implemented because of the terrorists on 9/11. And so Minority Report shows us a near distant future, right, where it's a kind of dystopia, where you have pre-crime. That's the notion of collecting total information awareness, which was DARPA's program for the internet all along, I argue, actually being implemented, right? And so there's a little bit of weird occult tie-in where they have these three people who are kind of seers, who are kind of linked into the tech, who can kind of see into they can kind of actually project a remote view, I guess, and see what's going on. They're hypersensitive, intuitive types, and they can relay back to pre-crime headquarters, which is a private contracting company that now runs the justice system of the future. And so they're able to cut off crime before it happens. Now, there may not be people with crystal balls, but what the tech elite are doing is something relatively similar to this, where they collect mass data, and because they have everybody's information, they can do what's called simulant world system training or wargaming. Okay, now, I believe this is what Jade Helm was, and if you look at Raytheon and their quantum computing technology that they list publicly on their site, this is not any kind of classified technology, it's called the Jade System, and it's about wargaming and simulant world training, and they have obviously contract with the Pentagon. And so what we're doing here is setting up a kind of algorithmic future predicting system that can load up masses of data and then choose kind of what's the most likely outcome in different situations. And that's what it's all about. Because if you can do that, that pretty much, you don't even have to have 100% accuracy. You know, you only need a very high degree of accuracy to have a huge advantage in anything, right? Be it electronic trading.
It's enormous. The financial advantages are enormous.
Exactly.
And I think that's part of why Google and Facebook, if you look at their equity market valuations, I think that's part of it.
I agree, totally. So that's what we have in the film, is this dystopian future where, you know, Tom Cruise is playing this agent who ends up on the run. He's, you know, he is jilted by the system and blamed for something he didn't do, so he's on the run. But what I thought was more relevant is all of the real world stuff that dealt with pre-crime. And as I mentioned, Jenny Romedy, who's the CEO of IBM, gives lectures on smart cities, and one of those smart cities is going to be Rio. Others are places like Singapore, and everything will be integrated there. So just like you have a smart TV now, when I was working at AT&T a couple of years ago, we had training for the coming smart houses. So I was training, you know, how to sell that and integrate that to customers back, you know, a few years ago. And that's going to be the norm in the next 5 to 10 years. People are going to have smart houses, and that's going to be everything in your house is going to be linked together. And then by extension, in the near future, you will have smart cities. Everything will be linked together. But there's a price to pay for all of this. And the price to pay is that central city computer systems will know everything about you and where you are and what you do and what you like and what you don't like and what you're most likely to do when you come to Computer City, right?
It's a harvesting machine.
It is. It's
a harvesting machine.
Right. I would. There's a creepy Apple ad as well that was played back in 1984 that I included in my article, and it's the Apple Macintosh Super Bowl ad that references 1984. And so, you know, you can make of that what you will, but I see it as kind of ominous. But yeah,
you know, the Super Bowl is always where they unleash the new vision for the, particularly
exactly.
for the males. I don't know right. if you saw the Boeing ad at the Super Bowl this year, but if you haven't, go check it out. It's called Just You Wait, and it's just a 30-second spot.
See
it shows you
yeah.
did see it, yeah,
yeah,
unbelievable. So always trying to give you the imprint of where this is going at the Super Bowl. Okay.
And always sold to you as good for you, right?
Right.
Never
right.
ever talk about the drawbacks, right, or the dangers.
One of the things I wanted to mention in our annual wrap up this year, we talked a lot about the different movies that were basically theming the Skynet theme. One was Spectre with the nine eyes, and another was
mm-hmm.
Winter Soldier with S.H.I.E.L.D. and
yes.
always who controls the orbital platform and how does mm-hmm. it connect to mind control down on the ground?
Well, I dug up, there was Air Force documents back in the 90s that talk about this, and the military-industrial complex is, of course, tied into Microsoft. Now, I'm not saying that I know for sure that Microsoft controls that, but I'm just saying.
I'll bet you a dollar.
Say what?
I said, I'll bet you a dollar Microsoft is a backdoor into many things in many places.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So, you know, you have, even in the 90s, in public documents, you know, Microsoft being involved in, and it's literally called Skynet. It's called, it deals with the ability to link up the internet to the satellites, to the all of the different nodes and hubs globally, and
right.
link that to the drones. And the drones in that document are spoken of as utilizing directed energy weapons. So
right.
there you have it.
Right. So, well, there's also a British Skynet, I believe. The UK military system is also Skynet.
There is, and they call their yeah. Skynet, right.
Right. Okay, next movie.
The next movie that came to mind was Oblivion, and this was a 2013 science fiction, pretty successful blockbuster that also stars Tom. Tom Cruise is really, they always stick him in these sci-fi blockbusters, don't they? Here we have a kind of twist on the future dystopia where you think it's aliens. You're watching the movie, I almost pulled too much, but you think it's aliens, and it turns out that no, there's no aliens. It's actually, in this case, advanced AI, who might as well be aliens because they're acting like aliens. And nobody knows where they came from. You know, maybe the big Pentagon developed Skynet and it got out of control. Who knows? But they have, the AI has basically deceived the remaining humans, aside from a band of rebels led by Morgan Freeman. And this band of rebels eventually convinces Tom Cruise that he's been deceived and he needs to join the good guys. And Tom Cruise's character is kind of a, I guess you could say, he's kind of a trained super soldier assassin type guy who's hunting down humans because he's been told that, you know, by the AI subterfuge that the humans are the problem and you got to get rid of them. So we have this notion again where the AI wants to stamp out humanity, and the AI has created this, basically this giant grid, and the AI, the central system, is floating around in space. But once again, this kind of Skynet theme. So I won't spoil the ending for anybody, but you know, we learn that Tom Cruise is not who we think he is. There's, you know, cloning is involved. So we have, again, this notion of biological genetic enhancement. Ultimately, it is mind control, precisely because everything that Tom Cruise, who's, you know, kind of the protagonist that we're following throughout the film, everything he's been told about the world, his world, is completely a lie.
Right.
And he has to face up to this and, you know, adapt and acclimate himself to reality, to the truth, you know, when he learns what's really going on. And so I see that as kind of an analogy or allegory for, you know, what we face in our world, because a lot of this is pretty much true. I mean, there is, you know, I think we are going to be put under this kind of AI dominance grid.
Well, there's a tremendous, in Oblivion, you get this tremendous divergence between official reality and reality that we're dealing with. And there's a couple of things in Oblivion. It really points out some of the key techniques to mind control. One is, it's a lot easier to mind control a group of people if they've forgotten or don't know their history.
Exactly.
And it's really interesting. If you go back and really study history, particularly the history of your individual family, you know, I can go back in my family and show you how the tapeworm harvested them again and again and again, and they didn't see it as a connecting theme because they kept going about the next year as opposed to sitting back and really understanding and unpacking history. So knowing your history is unbelievably important. Another thing we see in Oblivion, which I think is really interesting, is inversion. In other words, you're trying to get someone to think they're doing good when, in fact, you've got them doing bad for you.
That's a great point.
And so I always think, I always think of the examples of the NGOs. You get these caring young people who really care about something. You put them in the NGO, you have them do something, and they don't realize they're part of an op, which is making you money, you know, doing exactly the opposite of what they're intending. And they just have not a clue.
Great example.
In the money world, you see inversion happening all the time. Another thing is, you know, and this doesn't come out as much in Oblivion, but there's nothing like the mathematics of time and money to get you out of mind control, because when you're in a situation, if you really look at sort of the mathematics of how people are spending their time and how the money works, what you discover is, oh, wait a minute, you know, there's a real divergence between what everybody's saying and what's really happening here. You know, so if you work in Washington, what you'll see is they'll be on the TV saying, yada, 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 here's what we're doing and why. But if you're watching the budget and what's happening with the money, you're like, wait, that's not what's happening at all. And usually there's almost a complete inversion, so that if a bill says, you know, if the new bill says, you know, the Affordable Housing Care Act, you know, you just invert it and say the really expensive Destroy People's Health Act. And we've reached a point where if you just invert the title, you can probably figure out what it's about. Yeah.
Well, that was that old technique that Bernays came up with, right, where you change the Department of War to Department of Defense. Sounds a lot better.
Right. So, inversion.
Department of Love.
Right. So Department of Homeland Security is Department of, you know, control. The control and concentration of cash flow. Okay, next one.
Let's see. Next we chose Prometheus. And now this was the most recent installment of the Alien franchise. Also, Ridley Scott did the first one, and they get James Cameron and different people directing the later ones, David Fincher, and Ridley Scott returns to do the 2012 blockbuster Prometheus. Now, Prometheus is, of course, from Greek mythology, the guy who stole the fire of the gods. And so this is an image of rebellion or revolution that's always been a kind of enigmatic symbol for revolution, is the figure of Prometheus, or iconic symbol, excuse me. And one of the things that I thought was relevant to point out with Prometheus was not just the AI, which appears once again, and of course the corporate controlled future run by the Weyland-Yutani Corporation, who basically runs everything, but it's the doctrine of panspermia, right? And that's what underlies the mythology of Prometheus and Alien, and that whole franchise, is the idea of, well, we weren't created by a creator. We were seeded here by aliens who are our gods. And this is a very popular view that has gained adherence from persons like Richard Dawkins or Stephen Hawking, I believe, favors this. Watson and Crick, if I recall, were fans of this notion. And so it's always curious to me that people who, you know, find the notion of a creator so absurd and ridiculous don't find the notion of being seeded by aliens ridiculous. But nevertheless, I tend to think the aliens are kind of stand-ins for what we might call the demonic. And so what we have in Prometheus is the discovery of different cave paintings and steles and ancient primeval man, you know, talking about the same constellation. And so this prompts an expeditionary journey to a constellation that is believed to be the origin of mankind. And so when they Weyland-Yutani Corporation sends out a ship called the Prometheus, they discover that the engineers, these tall, pale, Nordic-looking creatures, they are not our friends. Our creators hate us and intended actually to create the what's called the xenomorph, which is the typical alien figure that everybody knows from the alien movies. That's actually a bioweapon. And so this bioweapon was intended to be brought back to Earth and unleashed to wreak havoc and depopulate Earth because the engineers created us accidentally. We were a screwed up, destined for the trash bin creation. And so, is it Rooney Mara? I get her mixed up with the other girl, but our protagonist in this film, Noomi Rapace, excuse me, named Dr. Shaw, she decides that she's going to basically head back to the engineer's planet and take them out. So a lot of this deals with mythology and the notion of, you know, getting back at God and stuff like that. But, it, you know, again, it shows us a future where people are basically ruled over by an AI corporate state, and that's embodied in the figure of David, who's played by Michael Fassbender. And we find out that the AI is not good. It's not nice. It's a mean AI, and he's often shown with, you know, the Totenkopf or the Death's Head. He's very much willing to bring the bioweapon back to Earth. That's ultimately what he's going to do. And, you know, he makes a lot of comments about how he doesn't understand and can't stand humanity, right, because of their weaknesses and their flaws. And he's more than willing to assassinate, you know, members of the crew on the ship in order to basically run tests on them, right? I mean, he impregnates Dr. Shaw, or excuse me, he infects her boyfriend with the bioweapon, who then impregnates her. And this is David's plan. David plans this. And so what can we get from this? Well, this is, again, this the notion of the doctors like you and Cameron and so forth, and the people who would be involved in genetic modification, these far-out wicked ideas, they have no respect for human life. They see it as you know, merely a process of Darwinian evolution, and you're just like another animal. And so there's every right. The establishment believes it has every right to, you know, practice these kinds of things upon humans as experiments.
Right. The human race is livestock.
Exactly.
So it's looked upon the way we look upon, you know, chickens.
And I believe in a lot of these alien films, not just mm-hmm. the alien series, but in a lot of them, they're aliens are representations of those in the elite, the establishment. Right, especially the Pentagon military-industrial complex establishment. They view us in that same view, like they're the overlords of, you know, Arthur C. Clarke's childhood Zen.
So, Prometheus. One of the things that was interesting, because this is the one of arguably my least favorite Ridley Scott movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that was astonishing is when. The moment when you realize that, you know, the engineer is headed back to Earth with the, mm-hmm. I don't want to give too much away, but basically intends to wipe out the human race.
Right.
I don't know how they managed to do it, Jay, but there is a moment when you feel that kind of evil. You can really feel it. I don't know, they must have used a mind control technique or something. But you really perceive what that would feel like and the reality of a force with the power to wreck and the will to wreck that kind of devastation. And it's very chilling because it's a moment when you really do. It's worth watching the whole movie for, I think, to kind of grok that level of evil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you had the same reaction.
Well, I think there's several scenes in the film that are kind of like that, and that happens throughout the Alien series. You know, where we see that this corporation has absolutely no scruples. The Weyland-Yutani Corporation, throughout the entire Alien franchise, is
right.
all about getting this bioweapon back to Earth. And of course, you know, the earlier installments, Sigourney Weaver's character foils the Yutani Corporation consistently. She doesn't allow the bioweapon or the xenomorph to come back to Earth, but that's all they want. But they don't care anything about anything other than obtaining this commodity, and that's how they see it, as a biowarfare commodity. And they're very much like the xenomorphs. And in fact, in the earlier installments, you actually see the presentation of the xenomorphs, who are just these kind of reptilian primal predators. The Weyland-Yutani Corporation is presented as actually worse than the predators, because they're just kind of like
right.
animals.
Right.
But the humans, and Sigourney Weaver actually says this at one point, she says, you're actually worse than the xenomorphs because they at least care for their own, whereas the Weyland-Yutani Corporation is just sees humans as completely expendable.
It's a machine mentality.
Exactly. But which
right.
back to that AI theme, right?
Right. Okay, next pick.
The next pick was Running Man, and so we're going to jump back to the 80s here, and this is another dystopian film that's pretty funny. It's actually kind of cheesy, and if you like cheesy 80s movies, which I do quite a bit because I grew up in the 80s, so it makes me think of being a kid. Here you have Arnold on the run in a kind of mix of reality TV meet American Gladiators.
Right.
So somewhat prescient, once again, on the part of Stephen King, it was a Stephen King story, to predict the rise of what would be, I guess, reality TV. So we think of things like UFC and Ultimate Fighting, and then we think of reality TV. And, you know, it really, I think, anticipated a lot of where TV and entertainment would go in the future accurately. And so kind of what we see like in a Hunger Games model, you're going to see this kind of gladiatorial, almost sacrifice of humans will be the norm. And this kind of stuff is ancient as well. It just goes back to Rome. And what's the purpose of that? Well, from a mind control perspective, the purpose of that is to desensitize people to the value of human life. So when it becomes a game or a sport or fun to watch people basically die, that's when you've really desensitized and brutalized your population. And there's an advantage to that because it's very amenable to the perpetual warfare state, right? A Pentagon military-run perpetual warfare state would like to have a population who delights in that kind of stuff. So here, Arnold Schwarzenegger plays this kind of accidentally falls into this situation kind of guy who gets blamed for, he won't kill a bunch of innocent people. He's working for the police state as a kind of paramilitary guy. He won't kill them, and so he gets blamed for, he gets put in this prison and blamed for something he didn't do. Well, he tries to get out of all this, and he's given the option of being put on this show. There's one TV network that runs all the entertainment, and their most popular show is The Running Man. And it's kind of like The Hunger Games. And so what you have to do on this show is basically run this long course and battle with these gladiators, some of whom are quite ridiculous. One guy sings opera, and he electrocutes you. But what's funny about this is that you have implantable microchips. You have the internet, actually, being referenced. There's one point where Arnold is going to buy plane tickets, and he gets on something called the InfoNet on his TV, and he gets on his computer there and orders plane tickets. Now, I don't think most people knew what the internet was back in 1987 or early 80s, whenever it was Stephen King wrote this story. But here we have an example of sort of predictive programming again. But what's the most crucial aspect of this film, I think, is the references to the media complex being able to create and stage things. So we actually have this scene where, because Arnold's actually successful in his running the course, he gets pretty popular. And so the TV network gets a little worried that he might get too popular and maybe even, you know, rebel against him. And so what they do is they completely CGI a fake death of Arnold, much like if you've seen the film Wag the Dog, right? In Wag the Dog, they basically create a fake war in Albania, and then sell it on TV, market it with T-shirts and Willie Nelson songs and stuff, right? So you had that same thing here even earlier in The Running Man. So those are the things that stood out to me.
Right, and it's to me, the mind control angle is you have an entire audience who believes reality according to what's invented on this TV.
Exactly.
That has nothing to do with reality. So again, it's this divergence between the creation of an official reality. One of my favorite shows in this vein is The Truman Show, where, you know, you wake up and you realize, oh, the entire life on Earth is a reality TV show.
Exactly. And,
yeah, we're being watched.
There's another funny part. If you pay attention to Running Man, in the background, you can see posters and ads for other TV shows that are on that network. And the titles of the show are hilarious. One of them is called The Hate Boat. One of them is called, instead of Love Boat, one of them is called Climbing for Dollars.
Oh, no. You know, go ahead.
Well, the other one is called Pain American Style, right, instead of Love American.
Oh, Jesus. The first time I really got an education in entrainment technology and subliminal programming on TV, the scientist sat me down in front of a big digital TV screen, and over a couple days period, we watched reality TV shows, and he showed how entrainment was used to manipulate not just the audience, but the participants. Wow. So mm-hmm. you could, like on The Bachelor, where you're choosing, you know, one guy's choosing between a group of different women. You know, one day you have him fall in love with this woman, but the next day you have him fall in love with this, and you calibrate with the audience to see which, you know, if he picks, what woman can he pick that'll give you the best ratings? You know, so it's designed.
Oh, yes.
It's a little bit like the campaign. You're playing different niches within the audience and trying to suck everybody in and figuring out how you can optimize. But it's you know, you're manipulating. So you see this in The Running Man. You see, you know, them manipulating the participants, but also manipulating the audience. And everybody's trying to figure out what reality is, and you know, reality is very hard to figure out, although Arnie obviously does. You know, I have to ask you if you have an Arnie imitation.
Well, I do, but I mean, I feel like that's almost so played out that, like, everybody has heard Arnold Schwarzenegger impersonation 10 million times that I would actually be doing your audience a disservice by subjecting them to another Arnold impersonation. But I might do a little, you know, I might do some Nick Cage or something for you later, maybe. I don't know.
Perfect. Okay, so what's next?
Well, next I chose another Arnold installment, which is, of course, the Terminator series. Now, this one can't be overlooked in this subject matter precisely because it deals with Skynet. And Skynet, as we said, is an aspect of mind control because the Terminator series, well, James Cameron, you know, he takes over this franchise and gives us, I think, what's one of the clearest revelations of the dangers of what we can expect. And so here I talked about, you know, all these same notions of Malthusianism, depopulation, and that's, you know, that's what Skynet wants to do. You know, it creates these Terminator bots who are going to depopulate whatever's left of humanity. And so once Skynet goes live, its whole purpose is Malthusian plan. And so that's the whole storyline of, I mean, everybody I'm sure is familiar with Terminator, but we also have the notions of nuclear war, mutually assured destruction, and all that come into play with Terminator 3, where Skynet activates a wargaming scenario across nuclear strikes between Russia and the West. And, you know, if you look into things like the PROMIS technology story, which was reported by Wired and deals with the backdoor technology and all the smart tech, and then right. you look at Terminator 4 Salvation, what you see is, again, all of these same themes of the super soldiers, and as I mentioned earlier, the 1995 military document that discusses directed energy weapons and Skynet. I include that in my piece, so there's a link to the FAS.org section where we do have documentation of what Skynet is, and it's everything that you see in this film. So I tend to think that Terminator was not so much something that some creative people cooked up and then it just happened to mimic reality. I suspect that, you know, the Pentagon was probably involved in the crafting of this story.
Right.
And there's a lot of books, by the way, that, you know, people could look at for documentation on that kind of stuff, like Operation Hollywood or the CIA in Hollywood. Those are two good books that deal with that kind of stuff, the Pentagon's right. involvement in film.
I don't think any major movie gets distributed without the Pentagon's review and approval.
Absolutely.
So if they object to anything, it's gone.
And of course, my book will deal with a lot of that that's coming out. So yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about. I'm dying to read your book. I want to know when's it going to be available.
June of this year.
June. Okay. Okay. So.
But it can be pre-ordered now. So.
So okay. Next, we got two more to go.
Well, everybody knows They Live, I think. And what do we have here? Well, we have a secret government run by the elite that are actually aliens. we have the manipulation of mass thought, mass mind control through this signal that's sent out through the satellites, beamed out. The elites are actually not fully human. They're, in this case, aliens. And I take that to kind of be an analogy or allegory for Malthusian depopulation adherents and or persons who are possessed, right? It's a kind of demonic idea. So I see the aliens as kind of demons, but the analogy is still appropriate. And so you have Rowdy Roddy Piper's character, this kind of vagabond traveling worker guy who ends up enmeshed in this this big war that's going on secretly between humanity and the Malthusian elites. And we have this, what I say again, see is an allegory of the glasses, right? There's these glasses that you wear that shield you and let you see what's really going on in the subliminal advertising and the mass media, the signal is being beamed out and so forth, right? You're actually able to see how you're programmed. And so the glasses, are an emblem for waking up and seeing what's really going on around you. It actually is a control system that lets you think that you're free. So, you know, I'm sure much more could be said, but, you know, that's really what sums up, I think, the most important message of They Live. And I'm trying to remember the ending of it. Go ahead.
Yeah, they blow up the Skynet.
Right, they blow up the signal. Right. Yeah.
There are a couple scenes that I love in They Live where the hero, the protagonist, is trying to force someone to put on a pair of sunglasses and they don't want to.
Right. You'll never forget such, the fight scene. It just keeps going and going. Yeah.
It's such a great, because there's so many people I know who realize, okay, there's a huge divergence between official reality and reality. I want to understand reality. They start to understand reality, and they keep trying to go back and tell all their friends or family in the official reality what the truth is, and those people don't want to know it. They're like, no, I don't, life is too hard as it is. I just want to be able to pretend the official reality. I don't want to go there. and you get these struggles, and it's always a challenge for me to try and persuade, for example, our subscribers, no, you don't want to do that. don't start that fight. You know, give them, you know, offer them sunglasses if they want them, but don't, you know, don't have that fight.
Tell them to watch these movies. That's another route. You know, that's kind of what you're after here in this talk. And you know, if people are reticent to wake up, or you know, then I've had a lot of success waking people up through talking to them about movies. Because everybody loves movies; they're going to watch these. They remember these. Say, hey, well, you know, you don't like the idea of a new world order. Well, remember that movie where you know they talked about it? doesn't reality seem to be matching up to what you saw in these movies?
So, I have to tell you a story. I had a roommate. I graduated from the University of Pennsylvania, and I had a roommate who was a wonderful person. And when I was in litigation with the federal government, you know, I made the mistake of trying to stop the housing bubble and got involved in this huge enemy of the state thing. So I'm living in this beautiful mansion in downtown Washington, having horrible physical harassment. People are breaking in, following me. It's really dangerous. So she agreed. She was crazy enough. She agreed to come stay there with me just so I wouldn't be alone. They were worried I was going to get offed. Anyway, so she lived through it. She experienced it. And you would have thought she would have believed what I was saying. Anyway, I'm driving down the highway in 2001. And I get a call from her. And she says, Fitz, have you seen the new Soprano TV shows? And she said, they're all about HUD fraud. And I said, yeah, I've seen them. And she said, well, she said, I guess what you're saying about the HUD fraud, the mortgage fraud, is really true. And I said, wait a minute. You're telling me that when the Assistant Secretary of Housing, the former Assistant Secretary of Housing and the former lead financial advisor to the Housing Department of the United States tells you that it's true, that doesn't make it true. But now that it's on the Soprano TV show, now you know it's really true. And she said, that's right, and which is why I say in America, fact is fiction and fiction is fact. And
I've had the same thing happen with family members,
so I absolutely think if you want to help people understand this phenomena, the way you do it is with the movies. There was one thing we didn't bring out, and that was I hate to give away too much of the plot, but I won't even say which movie because I don't want to give away the plot. In one of these movies, the world leaders have little chips in them that will blow up if they don't do what Richmond Valentine says. Or you certainly see it in the Spectre movie where the members of the conspiracy don't, you know, the Nazi International, if they don't do what they're told, you know, they're killed immediately. So you've got people in positions who might as well be machines because they literally don't have the option. Mm-hmm. You know, if they defy, they're dead in 1 second.
Exactly. Right. Speaking of HUD, I don't know if you saw the reboot of The X-Files, which I didn't think it was that great, but I thought of you when I watched the third episode, which was kind of a satirical Monster of the Week episode, The Trash Can Man, because that episode ended at HUD.
It was HUD West Ball. Philly, which is where I grew up. I grew up in West Philly. Believe it or not, the Carter came to the 2014 Secret Space Program and sat in the front and took notes the whole time. I had dinner with him. He's a fabulous guy. And I must say I enjoyed them. I like the X-Files, and I thought, you know, the Trashman was the least favorite of mine, but I don't know if where he got the West Philadelphia thing. But, you know, he's a very serious researcher. Very, very intelligent guy. And, you know, he sat there during Secret Space Program for 2 days and scarfed it all up, took notes, everything. He's a pretty serious guy. So I'm hoping he will do more because I thought this series was pretty interesting. Okay, so we have one more.
Right. Well, we could have chosen The Matrix, and certainly everyone has seen The Matrix, but I chose Tron just because it's so much earlier than The Matrix, and it's kind of the same storyline. Right. So the 1982 Disney film Tron was pretty spectacular for its time in terms of, you know, special effects and prognosticating what would come in the future as a result of computers, virtual grid, and so forth. And so what's interesting here is that, as you just mentioned in the previous, in one of the previous commentaries that we talked about, I forget which film it was, but this notion of a, well, I think it was Running Man, right? So you said that everybody was watching the Running Man and thinking that reality is what's on this TV show. And I think that what we're going to see in the future with virtual reality technology being rolled out by entities like Facebook, Oculus Rift, and so forth, I think in Xbox and Microsoft, you know, will be rolling this out as well soon. You're going to have this actual situation of not just believing the lies on television, but the option of actually plugging yourself into a completely virtual world. So we're actually
right.
Step one level up in terms of the synthetica and false reality. And so, but it also operates, as you said, as an allegory for believing the reality that's presented to you by pop culture, mainstream media, Hollywood, and
right.
so forth. And that's what the grid is. And so you have basically a large AI that runs this grid, and it's developed by a bunch of guys who think that they're building video games, right? They're coding and programming video games, but it's actually a corporation that's tied into the military-industrial complex that wants to use this for, well, global control and gaming and stock market and stuff like that. But then the AI gets out of hand, and what it wants to do is basically run the real world like it runs the virtual grid. So all these ideas of creating a global AI Skynet grid are also present in the 1982 film Tron. And, of course, we have the rebellion against the programming on the part of protagonist character Flynn, but on the character Flynn, who is actually a programmer, and he, you know, rebels against this, and they have, you know, fights and battles and so forth. And yeah, I just saw it really as the idea of trapping man in a virtual matrix of synthetic reality. That's really the ultimate nefarious Pentagon plan, the most nefarious one you could think of, right?
Right.
I mean, this is the Matrix, you know, 20, 30 years beforehand, telling you what's coming.
Right, and I agree with you. The virtual reality, from what I've seen of it, is really scary.
Yeah, right.
Really scary.
I've talked to some people who, you know, work in those kinds of fields, pretty high-up tech people, and, you know, they say you wouldn't believe what's coming and what's out there. Or what will be out there soon.
Right.
And what the military has, of course, is, you know, 20, 30 years ahead. And they say that, you know, it's almost reality, you know, that can be mimicked in these systems.
Right. Right. One of our subscribers sent me an email the other day and said, you know, the top 10 gold stocks, if you look at the market capitalization of the top 10 gold stocks on the exchanges, they total up to 29% of the value of Facebook. And that's because the ability to entrain and manipulate a billion people, you know, through one channel is worth a lot.
Oh, yeah. Right.
It's worth a lot. It's funny. I once had Sunday brunch next to a guy who ran the Lockheed installation at Orlando next to Disney World. And he was retired, but he was grousing about the fact that Lockheed developed and created all of this stuff for the military, and then they transferred it over to Disney, and in the public perception was that Disney had created it all. It's like, that's ridiculous. The military created everything.
Absolutely.
And it's funny, I had a friend who took a management course at Disney World, because I think a lot of these different, you know, the divergence between the official reality and reality, a lot has been prototyped through Disney and Disney World. But
he took
a course because, you know, at Disney World, you know, beneath the ground, there's like this whole covert world managing and manipulating the upstate. You know, they're doing all the all the logistics are done underground. And it's a beautiful metaphor for our entire society because you've got this covert reality that's sort of managing and controlling everything. And then you've got this overt reality with Minnie and Mickey and everybody's happy. Maybe.
Yeah, you know,
they're being harvested.
Another film that shows that, that we didn't talk about, that people could see that in it. It's something really ridiculous and silly. It's the it's late 90s. It's the film Josie and the Pussycats. Now, it's a stupid comedy, but it actually shows everything that we're talking about. So that this band, this pop band is actually created by the military-industrial complex. And by the end of the film, the pop band discovers that their popularity is not their own, but rather that the military-industrial complex was using them as a means by which they could test mass subliminals and mind control to see if, you know, make a long story short, what they discover is that there's a whole underground base where the military-industrial complex creates not just the pop music, but even the fads.
Wow.
So they're actually interested in crafting fads. And so you have every aspect of mind control is contained in this pretty ridiculous film, 2001 film.
I'll have to check that one out.
It was a flop, like, in terms of the box office. It didn't even make half of what it cost. But if you go and watch it, you'll be blown away by, you know, all the revelations in this film.
Well, there are different reasons I think these movies get made. One is, so with They Live, I think people are, you know, John Carpenter's trying to warn you and tell you something, and this is the safe way to do it, is to get it out in fiction. So that's one reason, but I think a lot of it is the military, or basically the system, letting off steam. It's a steam valve, and somehow telling people in fictional form makes it bearable for them to keep trucking along in the official reality.
Yeah, it's a conditioning. I completely agree. Yeah, and I've written a lot on what I think the strategy of the predictive programming is.
Right.
And I think that's what it is, right?
We haven't talked about it as much today, but one of the things I like about your writing is you really see the linkages between popular culture and you know, sort of historical culture and the different threads that run run from religion and from literature into a lot of these things. The directors and the producers really, and the writers really make an effort to sort of connect it back into very deep roots within the culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I've argued that many times. And, you know, and that's just, I think, partly because, you know, you can't really tell stories without looking at ancient stories, you know, without looking at the Greek tragedies, Homer.
Right.
You know, Plato's Republic, Socrates, and the dialogues, you know, you're really forced to go back to these things. A lot of what we're dealing with, you know, was told in those stories, right? Especially in the Bible, right? You're dealing with tyrants and tyrannical dictators and leaders who see themselves as divine. That's really, I think, what it amounts to is understanding that, you know, they're just humans. They would like to erect, you know, an AI system basically like God, but they're still human beings. And so, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of man. You know, we should be more interested in fearing God, as Proverbs says, and not fearing man. So I don't want to leave everybody with the impression that, you know, this is all a big scare tactic or fear tactic.
Right.
That's part of, I think, programming is fear tactic.
One of the reasons I try and get my subscribers to watch movies that teach them about mind control is so that they can turn around and see it in everyday life. So, one of the problems I had when the school shootings began, teaching people to not jump to conclusions and to understand what was really happening, you know, they had to understand mind control because they couldn't fathom a child being mind controlled and using as a patsy or, you know, also doing some shooting. And they couldn't fathom it. And it was through the movies that I could get them to fathom it. And I've always been amazed how no one has been able to make and get out a movie of a kid who gets mind controlled and used as a patsy in a school shooting. So apparently there still must be some sensitivity in the establishment about that.
Well, I've seen it with family members who've had emotional mental problems, who've been on psychiatric drugs. I don't think that they were directly, you know, mind controlled. They weren't part of MKUltra.
Right.
But what I saw with these persons, and you know, I had a family member who tried to commit suicide as a result of, once they got on, I think it was Prozac back in the 90s, they tried to kill themselves immediately. And
right.
So even though they might have been emotionally disturbed prior to that, it was made even worse by the drugs. So that, to me, shows, you know, the reality of how this can hit home. You don't even have to, you know, look at the possibility of a teenager out there doing it. You know, I've seen and known people who, I know, and I have another friend who, you know, tried to commit suicide as well as a result of Zoloft. So it's very real.
Well, I'm convinced that this effort to get both kids and adults on these different, you know, they're basically addictive substances, I think. I mean, they're controlled substances, is really to make it much easier to manage the divergence between the official reality and reality.
I agree.
Because that divergence makes people neurotic. Mm-hmm. And you can get them to adapt and go along much easier if you drug them.
And that's everything that's presented in Huxley's Brave New World. Absolutely.
Right. Okay, very quickly because I want to talk more about how we can follow your work. I just wanted to bring up two recent examples that of things in the news that help people understand mind control. One is the serial killer from the Uber app. Have you been following that story?
I followed it a little bit. I read a couple articles, but I didn't follow it intently. But yeah, this is interesting.
Well, so this killer is saying the Uber app made him do it. And, of course, people are reading it thinking he's crazy. But in reality, if you look at the technology, it may be true.
I think so. Then there are patents for these things. There are patents for
right.
the ability to use screens and signals to trigger people.
The other is there was a marvelous story of a guy who had started fighting. He was a sort of white, more established-looking guy who was at a Trump rally, and he started fighting with a black guy and was later interviewed, right, and said, I don't understand what came over me. This isn't me. It wasn't me. And he literally described, I was possessed. I don't know what happened. And I was laughing, thinking, I know what happened. You know, if you've ever been in a large event where they're using entrainment technology or this kind of technology, it's very, very powerful. And if you go into that kind of, I mean, it's better to just avoid situations where they're using that stuff. But if you do find yourself in one of them, you really need to know that it exists. And, you know, because if you know that such technology exists, you can protect yourself from being taken over, although I'm sure if Richmond Valentine has his way, there's some technology that even consciousness may not be able to protect you from. We'll see. I'm a great believer in consciousness.
Yeah, I was not familiar with this entrainment technology, but you know, you kind of clued me into that when we were at the conference, and that's fascinating because it ties directly into, you know, a lot of the stuff I've been researching. So,
right.
Yeah, I think you know, who knows to what, especially with nanotech, I mean, who knows to what degree, you know, we could be infected with these kinds of things, especially given the possibilities
right.
of vaccinations using nanotechnology.
Right. Right. That's another door. Well, Jay, I can't thank you enough. Before we start to talk about how we follow your work, any other impersonations you want to share with us?
Well, I have a friend, my good buddy Nick Cage is here. I might put him on, and you might.
Perfect. I love Nick Cage. So it's Nick Cage from where or what?
Well, Nick Cage from every movie that's ever been. I don't know if you've followed my work, Catherine, but I've been in basically every film since the beginning of Hollywood. But it's a pleasure to be here. Enjoy the Solari Report. Just wanted to say, Catherine, you're a national treasure.
Well, Nick, thank you for joining us on the Solari Report. Okay, so let's turn to your work. So, Jay's Analysis is your website, and we can start as an unpaying subscriber, but go to a paid subscriber, and we can also pre-order your book. So, walk us through the website, how we use it, how we sign up, and how we get that. But I'm dying to read your book.
Right. So as you said, you can there's a picture link that you can just click on the book there, and it'll take you to Trinity Press, which is publishing my book, and you can order it there through PayPal or credit card or whatever. And then I have the subscription links there as well. You'll see the subscription tab. You can click there, and what you get there is my full interviews and talks for paid subscribers. So I do the history of philosophy. That's what I specialized in college and grad school was philosophy. And so a lot of people don't know about philosophy, and they don't see why it's relevant. Well, I kind of try to arm you with the skills to critically think and analyze. So philosophy is actually very helpful, especially if you are in a profession or a field where you're having to do analysis. And so critical thinking, logic, and so forth are crucial. And I think that the education system has really robbed us and cheated us by basically removing those things. You know, you're not really
Right.
taught critical thinking anymore. So that's what I do is I try to go back to that kind of stuff and really arm and equip people for that. And one of the ways you do that is by going back to the classics. So I just concluded 8 lectures on Plato's Republic. So, you know, one of the most important documents in the history of all of the West, which would
Right.
go on to inform, you know, everybody from the founding fathers to even religious thought. And so you can go through that. I have lectures on most of Plato's dialogues, as well as interviews with persons like Dr. Joseph Farrell, yourself, and many other people who I think are, you know, very insightful analysts. So that's what I offer at Jay's Analysis. And as you said, you can also just follow the work there. There's, I think, 800 or 900 articles there. I've written about 700 of those, and 105 or so are film reviews. So you can read all those, and then there'll be a lot more in the book that's not on the website.
And the title of the book is Esoteric Hollywood: Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film.
Absolutely, it is.
Okay, well, Trine Day is a fabulous publisher, so I'm glad to hear that you're with Trine Day.
Yeah, they
Okay,
have a lot
well,
of stuff you can't find elsewhere, so
that's to say the least.
yeah.
Well, Jay Dyer, it's been a real pleasure having you on the Solari Report, and this is really a very delicious group of movies, and it's certainly, if you want to know about mind control, you can certainly learn a lot about it. But I think the thing that really came out for me, because you chose a very different selection of movies than I would have chosen, and it very much broadened my horizons, because I realized as I was going through all the ones that you chose, including some which I chose, but is that the really the theme that's being explored is how do you make a human into a machine? How do you make a machine into a
Exactly.
human? And that's really where transhumanism is going, is this convergence. So, and the movies are telling us an awful lot. And with artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things blossoming, these are
Right.
themes we're going to have to understand if we're going to navigate reality or official reality, either one. So I can't thank you enough. This has been very, very instructive.
It was a blast. I enjoyed it. I always love talking movies, and I enjoy talking movies with you. So, yeah, absolutely.
We'll do it again. Jay Dar, you have a wonderful day.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Fitz.